seen. Someday I'll go and call up Rudy. We work together at the factory. What could I say if he asked what's new? Nothing much with you. Nothing much to do. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in that. So if you're walking down the street sometime, spot some hollow ancient ass, please don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say hello in there.
John Prine for Bill and Martha. Hope you enjoy the show that's coming up on Tuesday featuring his brother, Billy. And I'm glad you are here. A quick note, today is registration day at our Youth Media Center. You can stop by anytime between noon and 1:30. To check things out. Our youth media programs are open to students in grades 6 through 12. They are 100% free, typically run Monday through Thursdays between 3 and 6, Saturdays between 10 and 2. You can drop in when you'd like to once you register, and you can get all of the information about registering today between now and 1:30. Alexa is here. I saw Grace here as well. Joseph of our team are here today. If you can't make it and are still curious, you can go to ymc.slbradio.org. ymc.slbradio.org. There you can learn about all of the programs that are available at our Youth Media Center. Last week's honor segments featuring Prime Stage's 5th Annual Drama Awards, Junior Achievement of Western Pennsylvania 18 Under 18 honorees, and singer-songwriter Liam Kars are now available at slbradio.org/catalog, along with over 1,000 other on-demand pieces from years on and off the air. We hope you'll stop by to slbradio.org/catalog, allowing you to explore that library. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger, Alexa Bozick, Ty Chorosky, Joseph Kukula, and Grace Anderson. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start. The Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WRCT, Pittsburgh, WIUP, FM, Indiana, WMCO, New Concord, KRDP, Apache Junction, Goldfield, Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ FM Grove City, WCUC FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, WKYW LP Kaiser, West Virginia, Mountain Streams Radio. .org, Tube City Online at WMCK.FM McKeesport, and SLBRadio.org/radio, where you can listen online. Dr. John at the Saturday Light Brigade. And today we've got a lot of folks here for our Youth Express segment, and I'm excited about that. And our first guest for this hour is sitting right in front of me. Her name is Lila. She's a 10th grader at Pittsburgh Kappa from Observatory Hill, and a little bird told me that tomorrow is your 16th birthday.
Yeah.
Happy early birthday. Tell me, we'll talk about, Lila is one of the people honored by the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh Teen Media Awards program. Before we talk about that, I'd like to just get to know you a little bit better. What do you like to do?
I just like to make art and stuff like at school, and I play hockey.
What kind of ice hockey?
Yeah.
Very cool. Is it hard to find places to play? I know I've been told there are not enough places to play hockey in the city.
Yeah. It's pretty good, usually. Sometimes there's not enough girls for some teams and stuff, though.
Well, how did you get into it?
My siblings both played, so then I just joined.
Well, that's terrific. Oh, any shout-outs that you might like to make while you're here?
I don't know.
Well, what are their names, your siblings?
Zach and Maddie.
And let's talk a bit about your project. My understanding is you created a mural. Can you describe first what it looks like, and then we'll talk a bit about how you made it?
Yeah, it's a turtle swimming through the ocean, like the top of a turtle, and it's just really colorful, like all different colors.
Neat. And how big is it?
4 by 8 feet.
Wow. And what did you make it?
I used bottle caps.
Oh, interesting. So bottle caps, like plastic?
Yeah.
And so, and those aren't good for turtles, which is interesting, right, if they go into the ocean. But so do you see the turtles? It's just, I'm curious, can you describe it a little bit more?
Yeah, it's basically just, like, there's a turtle on one side, and then you can see, like, the waves that it made to show that it's swimming through. And it's just, it's not like the colors of the turtle. The shell of it is like oranges and pinks and yellows. And then the fins are teals and greens. Just because I didn't have enough bottle caps of just the normal turtle colors. So.
What a cool idea. What, you know, it's hard to dig into an artist's work like this, but did you have any inspiration behind doing this, either for choosing turtles as a subject or for the way you addressed it?
Okay, well, I first got this idea when I was at SeaWorld a few years ago and I saw some murals made out of bottle caps, and then I just got the idea to make something like that, so I started collecting them. And then last year in ninth grade, I had to do a long-term project with like 30 hours about anything I wanted, so then I decided that I would make making that mural part of it. So then I did research on, like, other people who made art from garbage and stuff like that. And I did research on how plastic pollution affects animals and how it gets in the ocean and stuff. And then I combined those two to make that mural.
That's really neat. It reminds me of a sculpture I once saw that was made out of cigarettes.
Ooh.
And it was meant to be... it was a lion, if my memory is right, but it was meant to talk about the harm cigarette smoking can have on individual health as well as the environment, and that's kind of what you did, although very differently. It sounds like you like nature and animals.
Yeah.
Have you thought about what you might like to be when you get older?
Yeah, when I grow up, I want to be kind of a marine biologist and do a lot of research in the ocean and on coral reefs mainly, and also plastic pollution, global warming, stuff like that.
How do you think, do you think it's possible to solve issues of microplastics and plastic pollution? I guess I think if we just changed a few simple behaviors, we probably could. Have you thought much about that?
Yeah, definitely. We can definitely fix the solution if we have, like, people who will work together and we communicate and put money towards the right things.
Yeah, it seems to me it should all be possible if we just think a little bit more about it. Is your mural installed anywhere where people can see it? That's a pretty large piece of art.
Yeah, I don't have it installed anywhere, but I would love to. I just have it hanging up in my house right now, though.
I'm sure. I would hope. In fact, as you listen now, you just heard it's 4 by 8, right?
Yeah.
Is the size. Do you think it would be able to live outdoors, or should it be inside?
I don't think it would be that good outdoors, because sometimes when we moved it to get it onto my wall, some of the bottle caps were falling off, but most of them stayed on because we used Gorilla Glue, so that held pretty good. But I feel like after a while outdoors, a lot would fall off.
So if an indoor location would be good. So maybe you work for a company that has a lobby or some kind of space where you could put something like this. let us know and we'll get you in touch with Lila, because wouldn't it be nice to have other people have a chance to actually see it? Do you think you'll make another mural after this experience?
I still have a lot of bottle caps because I collected a lot and I didn't use all the colors or anything, so I've been thinking about making another, but I just haven't had the time.
Are people still bringing you bottle caps?
Yeah, some people are.
I figured, because it probably takes a lot. Do you know how many you collected?
I don't know how many I collected, but on the actual mural, it was a little over 2,000.
Wow. I am glad I asked that, because I don't think I could have guessed, and I would not have guessed that many. That's a lot. So you had to attach, well, you had to figure out where to place them and what color to use, and then they were all attached with glue?
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I wish you the best of luck. It must have been exciting when Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh let you know that your work was being recognized. And the Teen Media Awards are a program of Carnegie Library. If you go to carnegielibrary.org, you can find more information about it. Anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so, really.
Well, it's wonderful to get a chance to meet you, Lila. Thanks for being with us, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
now.
There you have the Turpentiners at the Saturday Light Brigade, recorded live on the radio back on June 27th, 2009. Happy that you're here today, especially during our Youth Express Hour. A lot more to come in just a moment. And I'm happy that Carolina is here. Hello.
Hi.
It's nice to meet you. And tell me, this is Carolina Praveen, and she is one of the 18 under 18 honorees this year. The award ceremony is going to be February 4th at Acrisure Stadium, where the Steelers play. And your project, well, before we talk about your project, let's talk a little bit about you. Tell me a bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm 17 years old. I'm a senior at South Fayette High School, and I'm from South Fayette as well.
South Fayette has so many great programs. I've been there a number of times. And we'll talk about your project in a moment, but what kinds of things are you interested in?
I am really interested in medicine. I really hope to pursue a career in it in the future. And kind of outside of that, I'm really interested in writing, actually. So I've written a lot of poems. I've written, like, a children's book. And it's kind of just, like, my creative outlet.
I'm sure no matter what field you choose, writing will be an important part of it, too. Do you know what life holds for you after you graduate this year?
Yeah, so hopefully I'll get to become a pre-med student and attend medical school. I don't know exactly what specialty I'd want to go into in medicine, but I know for sure that that's what I want to do in the future.
How long has that been an interest of yours?
Honestly, since I was a kid. So I think when I was really younger, my grandfather was a physician, actually. And I think just by example, I saw the kind of compassion that he had towards other people, and that always kind of stuck with me. And then just being able to kind of immerse myself in the field of healthcare as well during high school, I really realized that it's a very unique combination of just being able to lead a team, connect with other people, and also apply STEM in general, and that's something that really speaks to me.
And I understand you are an EMT certified,
right?
And you must be among the younger EMTs, I would think. Do you go out on calls?
I can't right now, unfortunately, but when I did, it was so amazing. I'm also trying to get my EVAC, which is the license you use to drive ambulances as well. So once I have that completely set, I'll get to, like, work for sure. But right now in the state of PA, just they usually want you to be 18, and I'm 17 right now, so I'm, like, counting down the days.
I'm sure they probably, I don't know if there's a shortage of EMTs or not. I would imagine.
Yeah, it always helps to have more, yeah.
Wow. You had to learn. Certainly you learn, I'm sure, CPR and mouth-to-mouth. You probably learn how to use a defibrillator. Mm-hmm. Are there first aid?
Right, yeah.
What are some of the other things you learn as an EMT?
Yeah, so in terms of skills, I think for the practical exam, we definitely did CPR. I am able to take blood pressures and pulses and breath sounds and everything in that sense. I have been able to take blood sugar, splint. I think I've been able to do long and short bone splinting, and then CPR as well. It's just been really cool.
Did they cover mental health first aid at all?
They do, actually. I think that was one of the chapters that we talked about. I think it's really important to be able to realize that some emergency calls aren't necessarily physical, and they can have some sort of mental background, and it's really important to be able to recognize that.
I'm glad to hear that. Probably sometimes where a situation just needs to be de-escalated or at least understood better. Now, if you're just joining us, this is Carolina Praveen of South Fayette High School. Fluency Forward is the name of your project, and then it also says Our Colorful garden. So tell me a little bit more about it.
Yeah, so the Fluency Forward Foundation is the nonprofit organization I founded about a year and a half ago, just based on my own experiences learning a second language and coming to the United States anew. I think during that process, I really realized that there is a need for a more supportive environment for those kind of children's holistic growth. And just based off of those experiences, I began to reach out to local students in the Pittsburgh area, both refugees and immigrants that are particularly underserved. And just in that process, I've been able to help them to learn English, kind of assimilate to the United States, while also being able to embrace their own background, because that's just as important. And then with the Colorful Garden, so I mentioned I really like writing. That is the children's book that I wrote.
Oh.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like it's a very extended metaphor about this flower garden that just kind of emphasized the importance of just the fact that like one's difference is their strength, and that a difference can be a source of beauty. And I kind of wrote it for the children that I work with through the Fluency Forward Foundation, and I was able to donate a lot of copies to them, and they just really loved it as well.
What a wonderful project idea. If you don't mind my asking, how old were you when you came to the United States?
When I permanently settled here, I think I was about 5 or 6. So I was just starting school, and I kind of found it difficult to be able to talk to other people just having that sort of accent and that kind of imperfect language.
I was going to ask, did you speak English at the time, or was it simply a different kind of English?
I'd say it was a different kind of English. I had some sort of English background just going to school in India as well, but it is definitely different to be able to talk to someone, even just a student, like a elementary school student, with an English accent, with the correct grammar and everything.
And you remember what that was like for you, and that's one of the reasons you wanted to do this. You must remember really clearly some of what you felt when you were that age.
Yeah, I think I remember specifically just because it was so kind of striking for me as a kid. I think that I didn't expect that to be an issue just coming and going to a new school in a new country. And I think those kind of experiences and that sort of isolation that I felt has always really stuck with me.
Now, for that reason, and maybe this is, it seems like Fluency Forward is probably mostly focused on your peers and younger students, and I want to get back to that in a moment, but do you have any advice for adults from the U.S. or students from the U.S. if they're welcoming somebody from another country? They might think they're doing all the right things, but I'm sure there are some things from your perspective, some tips, so to speak. Are there any that come to mind?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for native speakers is just to be patient. I always say that someone is really smart in their native language, but it might be hard to communicate that when they're trying to speak a completely different dialect that they aren't necessarily familiar with. So I think it's really important to be kind of cognizant of that. And I think just with patience, like taking the time to let that person just formulate their thoughts. You have to keep in mind that they are forming their thoughts in a completely new style that they're just not used to. And I think having that patience is really key to just creating a supportive environment.
When communicating verbally, does it help to slow down?
Yeah, it does help to slow down. And the kind of caveat with that is that it's important not to kind of like villainize or just demean the other person as well. They do understand what you're saying. It just might take a second. So as long as you're speaking in a slower tone without belittling them in any way, it's perfect.
And it's even okay, I would imagine, to say, do you want me to go slower or faster? You could ask that question. We've all seen sort of the funny movie scenes or TV scenes where somebody thinks if they speak English louder, other people are going to hear them. That doesn't work. One thing I'm curious about is my hunch says we produce a lot of audio here, and often there are people telling stories of their life. We've started to provide those with printed transcripts. My hunch is that if English is not your first language, it might help you understand what the person is saying if you saw the words as well. Is that true?
Yeah, that's absolutely perfect. I think that's the perfect opportunity for that speaker to just practice talking as they normally would, but also help the listeners as well, just kind of really understand what's going on.
Yeah, I think if you get to read along, and even I think native speakers, you might see a word and understand it better from its root or from its context than if you simply hear it. Well, those tips are good. Now, tell me about Fluency Forward and the work you are doing with other students arriving in the United States.
Yeah, so we are working with refugee and immigrant students in the local Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania area, and we are setting up these sessions with them. I've been able to work with the Jewish Family and Community Services, the JFCS organization, to be able to kind of coordinate that and just really create these kind of sessions where we are immersing these kids into an English-speaking environment. So we aren't teaching them how to speak or anything, but we are playing games in English or having a dance party in English, and I think that sort of immersion is sort of the key.
So they're getting a chance really to take part in ordinary day-to-day activities that other people their age might be doing in kind of a calm and ordinary way. Where are some of the kids you're working with from, or what languages do they speak?
Yeah, so we have a lot of students from Afghanistan. We have some from Syria. We have some from the Democratic Republic of Congo, the DRC. I think we have some from Venezuela, Puerto Rico, Russia. The list just goes on.
And what have you learned by doing this?
I've definitely learned that these kids are just so much smarter than I could have ever imagined. They are just so intelligent, and even though it might take them an extra second to really express that in English, I think just having that conversation or anything, interacting with them in general, has just been really rewarding and sort of like a full circle moment for me as well.
So as part of Fluency Forward, and Carolina has been honored by Junior Achievement of Western Pennsylvania in the 18 under 18 program. There's more than just you that can do this kind of work, because there are a lot of people. Have you created a toolkit or a way that other people can do what you're doing?
Yeah, I've had a myriad of different people reach out to me about just kind of contributing to that cause, because I think it is something that really resonates with a lot of people. And when these people reach out to me, I definitely offer them the kind of access to be able to help in these sort of sessions. I talk to them about JFCS and the work that it does as well. And I think that just having more people add to those sessions has been really helpful.
It sounds incredible. And your book is Our Colorful Garden. Is there a way people can find it?
Yeah, so I actually self-published that on Amazon. So it's on Amazon as both a paperback and Kindle form.
And the name of the foundation again?
Fluency Forward Foundation.
Easy to remember. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Congratulations. This is such a great idea you had, and I'm glad to see it put into action.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And I just really want to thank Junior Achievement again for just creating these endless amounts of opportunities for me and every other honoree.
Excellent. Best of luck with forthcoming career. Carolina is a senior at South Fayette High School. She's 17, and she'll be honored along with 17 other students under 18 on February 4th. At Acrisure Stadium at the Junior Achievement of Western Pennsylvania 18 under 18 ceremony. broadcasting live. Robotics next from historic Allegheny Square. You're listening to the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings from SLB Radio Productions.
You went away and left me here with your old hound. You went away and left me here with your old hound. And the only thing he's good for.
Larry Lewis and the Hound Dog Blues. We have an extra guest today that we weren't expecting. There's an actual robot here. Number 8393 is the robot's name. It says here he goes to Asimov Elementary School. I could see that. You are going to get a chance to meet members of the Brainstem Robotics team in just a moment. In addition to the robot, there are four human beings here in the studio with me, and you'll get a chance to learn about the work that they have done to bring this robot to life. Well, we'll see.
Macaroni Kid joins you in supporting Saturday Light Brigade. Macaroni Kid publishes weekly hyper-local e-newsletters and websites featuring events, activities, products, and places for Pittsburgh parents, kids, and families. Details on Macaroni Kid events and newsletters are available at cityofpittsburgh.macaronikid.com.
Today is registration day at the Youth Media Center. If you've been interested in getting involved in any of our programs, this is a great day to stop by between 12 and 1:30. Members of our education team are here to welcome you. And by you, I mean anybody between grades 6, well, really anybody, but adults, kids, all members of the family can come by and learn about our programs for grades 6 through 12. It all happens between noon and 1:30. We hope you'll stop by for registration day. Now, before we go too much further, I'd like you to meet members of the Brainstem Robotics team, and we're just going to more or less go around, and I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourself, let us know your age, where you go to school, and if you have any shout-outs you'd like to make, family members, teachers, anybody, this is a great time to do it.
Okay. Hello, I'm Avia Iyer. I'm 16. I go to North Allegheny Senior High School.
My name is Pia Dargan. I'm a 14-year-old, and I go to Pine Ridgeland High School.
I'm Özge Ada Usman, and I'm 16 years old, and I go to Shadyside Academy Senior School.
My name is Prakar Karen. I'm 16 years old, and I'm a 11th grader at North Allegheny Senior High School.
Now, you're all at different schools. How did you get connected for this project? How does the program work?
So we're a community-based team. So Brainstem is an organization that's been around for about 15 years. And so all of us found common interest in the first LEGO League program, which we're going to talk about more later. And so from there, all of us have progressed to compete in both First Tech Challenge, which we refer to as FTC, and First Robotics Challenge, which we refer to as FRC.
Interesting. And tell me about First Robotics.
Yeah, so the Brainstem organization competes in both First Tech Challenge and First Robotics Challenge. And so we're very well known in the First Tech Challenge community, winning 2 world championships. And this program is aimed towards children grades 7 through 12 who compete in robotics. Like, we have the robot over here, which is an 18-inch by 18-inch by 18-inch robot that's used to compete in a challenge that releases every single year. And this is the same for the First Robotics Challenge as well. But these robots are about 12 times the size of these robots that we see in front of you. So it's very large-scale robots that Prakar can talk about more.
Yes. Yeah. So I want to be sure I understand. Is the one next to me that is about 18 by 18, was that part of the first challenge?
So, for further clarification, FIRST Inspires is an organization, a global organization, that organizes 3 levels of robotic competitions. As Aviat said earlier, the First LEGO League, First Tech Challenge, and First Robotics Competition, FLL, FTC, FRC, respectively. Every year on a certain date, a season releases, bringing challenges that teams are tasked to design, build, and program robots either from scratch or maybe from kit parts to solve these challenges. In First LEGO League, you are on a field by yourself, and you solve all these challenges with a robot that you can put attachments on. For First Tech Challenge and First Robotics Competition, it's a 2v2 and 3v3, respectively. Teams build their robots, and they send their robots out to compete. You solve the challenges to earn points, and the alliance with the most points wins the game.
And are What are the age ranges for people participating in those?
First Lego League happens between elementary school and earlier middle school. First Tech Challenge happens between middle school and high school. And First Robotics Competition is primarily high schoolers, but some teams do employ middle schoolers, like 8th grade, 7th grade, if you know they're talented enough or if they just want to have them on the team, you know.
Interesting. So you all have had probably 5-plus years of experience in doing this sort of thing. Am I right about that?
Yeah, around 3 to 4 years of experience for a lot of us on the team.
And a challenge might be what? Can you describe a challenge that you might be given to solve? Or, and it could be the one you built this device to do. That's up to you.
Yeah. This year, there's these blocks we call samples. They're about 3 inches long and about an inch or maybe half an inch wide. And they're basically rectangular prisms. They reside in something called the submersible in the center of the field, and robots are tasked to pick them up and bring them to the human player station, where a human player on the outside of the field and the robot on the inside of the field can interact. These samples can be turned into specimen by putting a clip on one side of them, and you can hang these specimen on a pole in the middle of the field.
Okay, so realistically, and you said in the middle, is it sort of a submerge? Or are they in a pit or are they on the surface?
They're on the field surface, but mm-hmm. there's a wall between the robots and the samples.
Okay. So this realistically, this could be, I'm holding this little block here, which is about 1 by 1 by 3 inches. I mean, this could be a piece of hazardous waste or potential hazardous waste. Your job is to use what you built to grab it, bring it over. I know you're not doing this, but you could be putting it in a jar, labeling it. You had mentioned, was it indexing? What was the term you used for marking it?
Clipping.
Clipping, and then hanging it up. So is that kind of the application? Is what are you, how can you remotely collect these blocks?
Yeah, I guess that could be like a real-world application of it. Really, FIRST is all about inspiring young people to go further in STEM, whether that be robotics or whether that be community engagement. And FIRST Inspires really does give us a platform for community engagement, which Ozge can talk a lot about.
Yeah, so a really big part of FIRST is outreach. So apart from robots, like the whole big thing of FIRST is that it is more than robots. And as a team, we really take this idea to heart. We have 25 different outreach initiatives that we house under the moniker of Robots Without Borders. And our main goal as a team is to break down systemic borders that keep children from being able to reach their full potential. So we have a lot of initiatives under educational borders, medical borders, geographic borders, and socioeconomic borders, if you'd like to continue from there.
Yeah. So one of the things that we strive to break down are early and secondary educational borders. And one way that we do this through is through the Western Pennsylvania FIRST Lego League. Like we run Brainstem, the organization runs the entire program. And so these are these mini Lego robots that you see that are primarily targeted towards elementary middle schoolers. And so basically, Brainstem organizes 15 different competitions from the fall season, and from the past 3 years, we've more than doubled the number of local FLL teams, and we've hosted 15 different FLL competitions this year, including our 100th FLL competition over the past 3 years.
So the barrier in this case, it could be awareness of the program, it could be having whatever equipment or expertise you need to get started, and you're helping to fulfill that gap. And I suppose it could be money, too, if people don't have the investment, not that it's tons of money these days, but people might not know the fact that it is doable. Do you bring this robot in to show them, the smaller one, or did they actually build it?
So this is one that we created, and this is what's pretty unique about our first LEGO League program is we have a program called the Director Bot Scrimmages, which happens every single week. So like I mentioned before, we host 15 different FLL scrimmages, and their different teams come to compete. But at the very end of it, we call it the Director's Bot Scrimmage, where we add money to a pot, and at the very end of each scrimmage, if you beat the director's robot, you get the money that was involved in the pot. And so this motivates the children to work harder, and it's a really gratifying experience to see them come back happier every single time to compete against the director.
So this is about the size of a large, wide shoe. Maybe 8 inches by 4 inches. It sort of looks like a locomotive. So they would actually bat control two of these. You would control one, or tell me how they compete.
So what would happen is four team members would come up to the field on two different sides of a table, and you'd have one robot between the two teams. And you'd send them out to do challenges, and they'd come back to the home. You can use attachments as well.
This is, I'm looking at it, and at first glance, it looks like it's made out of Legos, but I see a little Ethernet-style plug in something that looks like it's connected to the wheels, so I suspect this could actually move on its own. Is this one that you can actually make move, or is the bigger one?
So this robot itself is a Lego Spike Prime kit, and so the entire frame is made out of the Legos, but the yellow brick that you see in the middle is like the brain of the system. And so in the first LEGO League competition, for 2 minutes and 30 seconds, it's completely automated, so children build the robot and then they program it, and they just keep going through this process throughout the fall season until they reach our Western PA FL Grand Championship, which we host. And so this year we had about 65 teams compete, and we send about 8 of them to the state championship, which happens in February/March. And so this is a really great experience because we're able to host many different teams that are not just in Western Pennsylvania. And this is unique to our scrimmages because a team in Youngstown, Ohio, which is about 20 minutes away from us, for their own in-state championship, they have to travel about 5 hours. But they're able to just travel about 20 minutes for our grand championship event. So we're breaking down borders there to allow many different teams to compete in our Western PA grand championship.
It looks like you were going to add something.
On the topic of breaking down borders, we place a lot of value in these educational barriers. We mentor teams, we start teams, but we also are very involved in outside of the first organization itself with our Child's Reach initiative. So,
yeah, what have you got there? And if you're just joining us, these are members of the BrainStem robotics team. And I know I'm trying my best to describe some of the physical things we have in front of us, including an 18 by 18, roughly by 18 inches high robot on my left that I think we're going to hear from in just a bit. Now I'm looking at a laptop screen that shows a frog and a bat. And next to it is what looks like another screen, but it's just a frame. It's a frame with no glass in it and a big red control button in the middle. What does one do with this?
Yeah, so this is part of our Breaking Medical Barriers Outreach initiatives. This is one of our hallmark programs, and it is our Child's Reach initiative. So we've been working in partnership with the Children's Home Hospital of Pittsburgh, particularly with Dr. Christine Roman-Lancy, to create a learning tool for kids who have cortical visual impairment. So what this is, CVI, it is a neurological condition that impairs how the brain processes vision. So we developed an interactive system that helps kids learn to recognize objects by their salient features. And this helps them be able to more clearly recognize what they see or put a name to what they see, essentially. And since a lot of kids who have CVI also have motor disabilities, we designed, the frame here is one of the interfaces we designed that is accessible. And essentially what you do is you would hover your hand back and forth, it would move the needle on the screen, and you'd be able to select.
Okay, so there's a sensor in the middle of this. It looks like that you don't need to touch. It's just picking up where your hand is, and that will allow the user to position on the screen.
Yes.
And how does the user perceive the images differently if they process images differently than most people? Is this based on the images you've chosen, or what makes them more accessible?
Well, a really key important aspect of vision learning for kids who have CVI is that they are able, they don't have a problem with the eyes themselves, but they have trouble interpreting what it is that they see. So they would be working with a parent or a doctor. Really cool thing about this is it's designed for both clinical and home use, so they can work with their parents as well. And once they learn the salient features, what particular things to look out for, they would apply this new knowledge to the images here, and based on that, they would choose which one. So I think here we have a yep. picture of a frog and a picture mm-hmm. of a bat. It lists the salient features of a bat above. So it says bony wings and small ears. And based on this, the child would apply this to the images and would select the image of the animal that has bony wings and small ears. So yeah.
Working with the children's home, you've distilled language and photos in a way that are most likely to be accurately processed by the students you're working with. And then you've given them some degree of autonomy by creating an interface that they can look at. That's really great.
Thank you.
That's great. Is BrainStem, is BrainStem a program that exists all over the country or world?
Yeah, so BrainStem is a community nonprofit organization where kids from all different schools can compete in the first challenge. Another barrier, outreach is a huge part of BrainStem. And a significant barrier that we like to dismantle is geographic barriers. So we actually have three major projects that we worked on. The first one is when we traveled last year to an inner city school in Belize, where we donated 20 Spike Prime kits. A Spike Prime kit is just a Lego kit used to create FLL robots like the one you see before you. And we also, while we were in Belize, we reached out to the principal of the inner city school, and they said that a lot of their elementary kids did not have access to these engineering and opportunities like FLL that we have in the U.S. So we had an assembly where we spoke to all the elementary kids in the school, and we introduced them to first FLL and engineering. And these 20 Spike Prime kits that we donated were actually used to create 20 new FLL teams. So now in Belize, we have created 20 FLL teams that have been able to compete in the first program.
How much does an FLL kit, the kits you just described, do you know roughly what they cost?
So it's a little bit more than $1,000, so it's pretty expensive.
Wow.
So like the brain itself is about $400, and to be able to practice, like you need your own field, which is probably about another $200, and you need the necessary materials to make like the exterior of the robot. You need large motors to be able to make it run. So overall, it's about $800 to $1,000 for a team. And so like Pia was saying, we were able to fund 20 teams in Belize, which was pretty gratifying.
That's amazing. I would never have guessed it was that expensive. I think of a Raspberry Pi or another small computer. But because these need to be rugged and do physical things, that must be part of what brings the cost up. That's incredible. Now, can you tell me about the big, I want to be sure, we have about 5 minutes together. What is this big robot labeled 8393?
So this is our first Tech Challenge robot for this year's first Tech Challenge season, which is named Into the Deep. And so, like we mentioned before, first Tech Challenge involves an 18-inch by 18-inch, 18-inch robot, which is used to solve challenges. And so in the match, you're playing with one other robot against two opposing robots. And the total match is 2 minutes and 30 seconds, where the first 30 seconds are autonomous, so it's fully pre-coded with the challenges that are instructed that you're instructed to do, and the rest of the 2 minutes are driver operated, so you'd most likely have two drivers operating the robot for the last 2 minutes of the match.
So did you build this as a team?
Yeah.
And you built it according to constraints you were given, which included the physical dimensions. Were there other constraints?
Yeah, so a lot of teams will take very different approaches. Like some teams I know, they have a single pivoting large arm that will pick up something in front, pivot, and drop something out the back. But as a team, we especially, when the season released, we came together as a team and we brainstormed different ideas. We broke down the challenge into collection, deposition, transfer, and we split up to divide and conquer, and we designed a different subsystems, as we call them, and we come together later and bring them together. And we do this using 3D modeling software such as Fusion 360 and manufacturing these parts you see before you. Like we use laser cutting, water jetting, and 3D printing, among other manufacturing techniques, to create a fairly complex machine with lots of interlinking parts.
And the challenge Into the Deep, what are you to do as part of the challenge?
So for the challenge, like you see that one inch by 1 inch by 3.5 inch samples. So like Prakar mentioned earlier, so there's about 80 samples that are sitting on a pit. 40 of them are yellow, 20 of them are blue, and 20 of them are red. And so because you're playing against two other robots, for example, if we're on the red alliance, which is like indicated by our team numbers because they're red, like you'd swap them out if you're on the blue alliance.
Mm-hmm.
But you're only allowed to collect the yellow ones and the ones that are on your, like the ones that relate to your color. So if you're on the red alliance, you can only pick up the red colored samples, and you either put them in a 40 inch tall basket, or you give them to a human player who puts a clip on them, and then you clip them on chamber.
Can you see them with your naked eye, or do you have to look at them remotely?
So you see them on your naked eye. So like you can, so it's like so it's hard to imagine, but it's about it's a field that's right in front of you, and so it's about
12 by 12 feet.
Yeah, 12 by 12 feet field, and so you have four robots competing on that 12 by 12 foot field, and you have like everybody in front of you, and for each of the competitions, you are like, you're next to the robot, and you control it like right there. So we'd like, if we would compete, we'd go to places in Pennsylvania like Lancaster, Philly, or even Southern PA.
So it almost, and I don't want to simplify it, it's almost like one of those vending type machines where you're grabbing a prize with an arm and trying to pick it up. But in this case, the prize is very specific, the one you want to get. It's significantly far away. You need to do it with precision multiple times, and you also need to do it with speed, it sounds like. Are you able to demonstrate how this works?
Yeah, we could show you by hand.
Yeah.
Basically.
We just have a few seconds, but I'm just curious, what does it do?
Yeah, so we have a lateral extension that has a collector on it with spindles.
Wow.
That's spindle's turn to collect the sample that is brought inside a little trough that is located right behind the collector. We put our extension back in, and our depositor, we call the end effector, flips down to collect it, which is on a raising lift. So once we grab it from our trough, we raise our lift up and flip the end effector out.
Wow, it just became about 4 feet high.
Yeah.
Okay, so this 18 by 18 inch device first extended its length by maybe a factor of three, and then it just extended its height even more so, giving it the stability, I guess, that it needs, as well as the reach
Yeah, so
that's like the physical limitations that FIRST gave us, that we have to stay within 18 by 18, but you're allowed to extend as however far you want.
Fascinating. Well, what is next for you guys?
So, like we mentioned before, we compete in FIRST Tech Challenge, but also FIRST Robotics Challenge. So we're currently in the midst of the FIRST Robotics Challenge, which released January 3rd this season. So we're currently in the CAD and programming phase of that, trying to design the robot to compete in our next competitions. But for the FIRST Tech Challenge aspect, we're preparing for the state championship in March, where we hope to qualify for the world championship.
These students are in 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, so they've got a lot more ahead of them. I want to congratulate all of you. We are pretty much out of time. Did any of you have anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, if anybody, any listeners are more curious about FIRST, they can go to firstinspires.org, and on YouTube there are many, many videos, extensive videos about designing, building, programming, and even competing with different robots from different teams around the globe.
And can people get involved specifically with BrainSTEM, your BrainSTEM team 8393? Is there a way they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, we have a website, brainstemlearning.org. If you do want to donate, we'd greatly appreciate, but it's never required. There is a button on the website to do so.
If you would also like to support our work with the Child's Reach Initiative, you can go to brainstemlearning.org/CVI. Whether you want to get in contact with us or donate or just learn about the stuff that we've been doing there, that's where you can go.
Well, congratulations to all of you. I'm glad you're here. Prakar, Pia, is it Oski?
Oske,
thank you. And Aviat, we appreciate your being here today. Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with some pretty remarkable teens. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUP FM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSAJ FM, Grove City, WCUC FM, Clarion, WNJR, Washington, WKYW LP, Kaiser, West Virginia, Mountain Streams, Radio.org, Tube City Online at WMCK.FM, McKeesport, and SLBRadio.org. Steve Katz from Blood, Sweat, and Tears was in the studio with us way back on May 21st of 2016. And out of nowhere, he decided to play this song live on the radio.
Sometimes in winter, I gaze into the streets, walk through snow and city sleet behind your room. Sometimes in winter, forgotten memories, remember you behind.